Right. I'm not a public speaker, so I might have random thoughts that don't really make sense, but about a year ago, one of our friends moved into a new house, and so we all gathered a bunch of people over there and went and helped him clean, and they were doing the roof and I don't know, all kinds of stuff. Us girls were mostly cleaning, the guys were doing stuff outside, but as a present to us, he gave us all a lemon tree. And he had replanted them, and they were just wee little things, and he had replanted them all and gave all of us one, or whoever wanted one. So I took that lemon tree home, and I was working full-time, and I just kind of threw it outside after I got out of the car and forgot about it for a couple days, and all of a sudden I saw that it was dying, and it was like, way too much sun, and it was turning brown. So I grabbed it quickly and put it inside and watered it and stuff and tried to take care of it. But I had that tree for probably about 9 months. It never grew an inch. And I was getting frustrated. I was like, you know, I'm wasting all my time on you. Watering it, I was moving it different places. I was like, I think I was even Googling it online to see what makes a lemon tree grow. It just would not grow. I was like, you know, I don't care. I just wish you would either die or grow. I mean, I don't want to deal with just this dumb tree that's not doing anything. It's not. And eventually it did die because I think I gave it some tea or something. I think it killed it. Actually started thinking that has a lot to do with us in the Christian walk. You know, Jesus puts a lot of effort into us. We hear sermons, we pray with people, we read the Bible, but are we really growing? I mean, do we really move on spiritually? Or is God just feeling like he's wasting his time on us? You know, you come to a certain point in your Christian life where you're like, you know, I'm a Christian and I'm going to heaven and there's nothing more for me to do. I can just live and be happy like this. But that's not really what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be growing until we die. And Revelation 3:14 verse 3:14 through 22, this is the angel speaking to the Laodicean church. And he says, "These things saith the Amen, the faithful and the true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither hot, cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth." Jesus doesn't want us to be lukewarm. He said, "I would rather have you cold. I would rather have you against me than just lukewarm." This is our business in life, to make sure that we are for him. If you're a Christian, you're supposed to be for Jesus, not against him. But you're not supposed to be lukewarm either. Like, you really don't care. I mean, you hear a sermon and you're like, yeah, I probably should change, but I really don't care that much. And you go on living just the way you are. And maybe your friends or your parents talk to you about something and you're like, well, I suppose I should change that, but you really don't care enough to actually do something about it. Or you're like, well, I'll do it later. I mean, how many of you have ever heard a sermon and you're like, really spoke to your heart and you really felt like you needed to get alone with God and you needed to take care of it and do something, but you're like, well, I'll just put it off because we're having a party this afternoon or my friend invited me over. And so you don't do anything about it right there when the Spirit is speaking to you. And then later when you go back to take care of it, the feelings aren't there anymore and you don't feel the same. And it's like, when God is speaking to you through the Spirit, you need to do something about it right then, even if you have to miss out on something fun in life. Then I had another plant. This thing right here. I transplanted it. I think it was about a year ago also. It was in a small little pot. I bought it from a grocery store here in town, and the pot was getting too small, and I knew it was getting time to transplant it, so I bought a bigger pot and transplanted it, and it basically died. There was nothing sticking out of it anymore, not even a dead leaf. It was just a bulb there sticking in the dirt, and so I kept it around for like a week or so, and I was watered it, and I was like, well, fine, this isn't going to do anything, so I just grabbed it and threw it out by the garage and forgot about it. It was about a couple weeks later, I got home from work one day, and I looked at the plant, and there was a green leaf sticking out of it. I was like, okay, this thing is alive. And I brought it inside, and this is what it looks like today. But sometimes we feel like God has just taken us and thrown us out by the garage, forgot about us. You know, the trials in your life, I mean, most of you are pretty young, so you might not even know what I'm talking about, but sometimes the trials get so hard, you just feel like God has thrown you aside and forgotten. But this is what he wants you to look like. There's a reason why those trials are in your life. There's a reason why he allows things to happen. It's your choice when you're feeling down and discouraged. It's your choice whether you're going to say, well, I'm just going to sit here and die because God doesn't love me and he forgot about me. Or if you can use those trials and moments to rise higher in life and find out why God is doing this to you. You might not necessarily know, but spend time with him. Ask him, what are you trying to teach me? Why are you letting this happen to me? Is there a lesson I'm supposed to be learning that I'm not learning? Is there something I need to change in? I mean, find out what God's doing to you. And he might not necessarily tell you, but be open and honest with the trials that are in your life. And, you know, you could just sit down there and pretend or decide you're just going to die because no one loves you and no one cares about you. And that's what it feels like all the time, but it's not the truth. And just like any of you heard Jerusalem's sermon or whatever it was, what things look like are not always what they are. And, you know, there's certain plants, if you've ever had a garden before, or even if you haven't had a garden, if you just observe things in nature, there's certain little flowers called pansies. They grow about this high. They're my favorite flower. And there are other ones, too, that if they're left by themselves in a garden, you know, they'll get about this high. But if they are surrounded by weeds, they will get as high as the weeds get. If the weeds are this high, the pansies will also get this high. And they are reaching for the sun because if they allow those weeds to climb higher than they will, they'll cut them out and they'll die. That's what we're supposed to be like. You know, it's a race to see who can get the highest. If you have trials in your life, rise above them. Don't let them block out your view of Jesus. You know, Jesus represents the sun, or the sun represents Jesus. And it's really hard to do, especially when you feel like you're going to die sometimes, or you wish you could, because things hurt so bad. But it's our opportunity to use those trials and problems in our life to rise higher. Now, one of my friends preaching one time as a sermon, I remember it still. He's like, if God puts hurdles and stuff in your life, you're supposed to use them as stepping stones. You're walking along the path and something drops in front of you. It's like, climb onto it. Don't sit down and, well, I can't go anymore because this is blocking my path. It's like you're supposed to get above it. And we should never let anything keep us from getting to Jesus. Luke 19. Verse 1. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was the chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was of little stature. And he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at the house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. Zacchaeus was determined. Nothing was going to keep him from seeing Jesus. He was short. And there was crowds and crowds and crowds around Jesus. And he said, I have to see this man. So he climbed the tree. Might have looked dumb to the crowd. He's like, what are you doing up there in the tree, you know? But he was determined, I have to see this man. And the cool part about the story is when Jesus got to the tree, he looked up and said, come down. You know, if Zacchaeus had not been that determined to see him, I don't know, maybe Jesus never would have said a word to him. But he's like, Zacchaeus, get down, I'm going to your house. And I believe Zacchaeus had a reformation right there and became a Christian because of this. And James 4:8 says, draw nigh to God and he will draw nigh to you. God is not going to force us to come to him. But when we want to, he's going to take the opportunity to let us in. As close as you want to become, as close as you want to get to Jesus, he will. He will let you. But he's not going to force you. It's our choice. It's our choice whether we want to become a Christian. It's our choice whether we want to grow higher with the Lord. You know, some people are content just to become a Christian and they stop right there. It's like that's all the farther they need to go because they know they're going to heaven, but they don't want anything higher and better. Or maybe they do, but they don't want to pay the price to get it. You know, it's not necessarily easy being a good Christian. You know, you are going to get mocked and ridiculed. You are going to get trampled on by the world when you stand against them. But we have heaven coming. They don't have any hope. It's like if you take your eyes off heaven and start focusing on all the trials in life, and you will become bitter and angry, upset, irritated, and maybe we'll never know sometimes why God allows things to happen to us. But I guess we don't have to know because we can trust him. It's like if you fully put yourself in God's hands as a father, if you trust your earthly father and you know that he's out there for your good and that he's going to take care of you and protect you, why can't we do that with Jesus? I have another illustration. From a quarter. Everybody knows what a quarter is. You can take this little quarter. You can throw it out there in the parking lot and you won't even know it's there. You'll walk right over the top of it. You'll drive over the top of it. You won't see it unless you're really looking. But you can take this same quarter and you can put it up to your eye and it blocks out the entire world. This represents your problems and your trials in life. How bad are you focusing on them? Are you letting them to overcome you? Are you letting them destroy you? If you focus on the trials and tribulations that you're going through, They'll come closer and closer and closer and closer to your eyes until they block out the whole room. That's all you see. It's like you're not going to be of any good to anybody else. You're not going to grow spiritually. You're going to actually be miserable, and you're going to make everyone else miserable because you're focusing on the wrong thing. Just take your trials and throw them out in the street and walk over the top of them. And I know that's silly to even say because it's hard to do, but it's like that should be our attitude. And remember that God has the right to hurt you. And you became a Christian. If you're a Christian, you put yourself under his authority. And God has the right to do anything he wants to you because you are his. You're a servant. We don't have servants nowadays, but when they did in the old days, that servant had no time, no money, nothing of his own. Well, he might have had a few, but he was under that master to do whatever he wanted at any moment. And that's how we should be with Christ. We don't have the right to say, well, I don't want that, Lord. Don't do that to me. Or sit and fuss about your circumstances in life. I mean, maybe sometimes your circumstances are because of your own foolishness, but a lot of times it's because it's where God put you, and you can sit and fuss about it or complain, but it's like that's not even your right. You belong to Christ, and he has the right to do with you whatever he wants. And it's our best interest to stop fighting him. It's like when you fight, you actually make it worse. You make yourself miserable, and you actually, God has to take a longer process to get you where he wants because you're fighting. 1 Corinthians 6:19. What, know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own, for ye are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. When Jesus died on the cross and shed his own blood for us, he bought us. If you take that blood on your life, he bought us. You're not your own anymore. Now, I believe that God puts trials in our lives to make us like Christ. I think his one goal and one aim in life is that you will become like Jesus. And I don't think that God hurts us just because he wants to, just because it's the thing to do. I think there's a reason. I mean, I know there's a reason. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it is. But God sees the whole picture. You only see a little piece. When you look at the whole picture someday, you're going to understand. You don't right now, but you don't have to. One of the greatest trials I ever went through in my life. I was emotionally crippled for weeks, and I couldn't understand why God would do something like that. It was like something absolutely terrible that nobody ever wants to go through. And I would just get in my car and drive and drive and drive and drive and cry and cry and I take my Bible and I parked somewhere and opened my Bible to where I was reading. It says this, 1 Peter 4:1. For as much then as Christ hath suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin. And that's God's goal in life, is to get us to cease from sin. You may not understand why he hurts you. You may not understand why such devastating things happen to you, and you know, we all think we have it really hard here, but you know, we really don't. You go talk to people out in the world, and they have it much, much worse. I don't always understand why God allows what He does, but maybe we won't ever understand. But when God hurts you, maybe necessarily it wasn't God, but He allowed it, take that time to go to Him and say, why are you doing this? You know, I mean, not in an angry, evil way, but use that time to get close to Him. You know, I was thinking of little illustrations in life. You know, when you crack an egg open sometimes, and you lose a little piece of eggshell inside the egg, what's the best way to get the eggshell out? You know, you can try your fingers, and you can, sometimes it takes 5 minutes. One of the easiest ways to get the eggshell out is I use another eggshell. You can get it out within seconds. And also, when you're cleaning the lint out of a dryer, the easiest way to do it, the whole screen is full of lint, you just get a little tiny ball of lint, and then you can use that little ball of lint to get the rest of the lint out. It works very easy. Sometimes the things that cause your problems can also fix your problems. And that's what I want to say about God. When He hurts you, He's doing it so He can heal you. And sometimes when God hurts us, we just run away and hide. We're like, fine, He doesn't love me. And so we go get on the computer, or we go play games, or we listen to music or anything just to get our mind off of God because He hurt you. It's like when God hurts you, I think He's saying, come to me. I'm going to heal you also. There's a verse in the Bible. Let me see if I can find it. Hosea 6:1. Come, let us return unto the Lord, for He hath torn, and He will heal us. He hath smitten, and He will bind us up. After 2 days He will revive us. In the third day He will raise us up, and we shall live in His sight. Like I said, Jesus doesn't hurt us so He can just leave us there. He hurts us so He can heal us. We may not ever understand it, but it's the truth because the Bible says so. When Jesus was on earth with His disciples, He spoke a lot to them. He was getting them prepared for when He died, because He was with them for 3 years, and anytime they had a problem, they could just go immediately to Him and say, what do we do? But He was leaving. He knew He was going to die. He was going back to heaven. He was preparing them for what they were going to have to deal with after He was gone. And if you ever want to read about it, it's John 14 through 17, and it's all Jesus talking to His disciples, and it's like some of the most precious part of the Bible. But here's just a few words that He said to His disciples. Behold, the hour cometh, yea, and now is, that ye shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone, and yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. Then He says, these things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. He's like, you're going to go out there and face trials and troubles. You're going to face tribulations. In me, He said you're going to have peace. If you think of me, there'll be peace. I know out there in the world you're going to have problems, you're going to have trials, you're going to have abuse. The world is going to treat you horribly, and we all know they do because you've been there. But he said, you are going to have peace in me. He said, be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. You can too. Matthew 26:47. And while he yet spake, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. Forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? It's the story of Judas betraying Jesus. I never understand it when I read it. It's like, how can he be with Jesus for so long, and then he just cares about a little handful of money to go get Jesus killed? It's like I always think that's so awful. But how many of us are betraying Jesus every day? When he's beckoning us to come to him, and we're like, no, Lord, I can't handle you right now. I'm going off with my friends. It's like you don't feel like you're actually betraying him. You don't feel like you're actually putting him down. But how many times do you think that he is hurt because you ignored him? Because you would rather do something else than pray? Or you'd rather do something else than read the Bible? Maybe even go to church. You're like, well, I don't feel like going to church right now, so I'm just going to skip out. Or I have a headache. It's like we just have to remember that, you know, Jesus was a man, and he had the same feelings that you have and same cares. I think he still does to some degree, and it's like he is up there trying to get us to come to him, trying to get us to let him love you, and some of us are like so hurt and so destroyed, we're just like, go, Lord, I just don't want to deal with you right now. And I often think that how much we hurt him every day, how much we how much he feels like we are rejecting him, because it's not even a conscious thing that we're doing all the time. It's just like we're just too busy. We're doing other things, and we are not taking the time to actually face him. And it's like it should be every one of our priorities to make sure that we spend at least every day we take time out for the Bible or prayer. We take time to just sit and face him. You know, get away from all your friends, shut the computer off, shut your music off. Get away from everything in life and just face God. And it's not always easy, because we live in a world of rush, and everything is fast-paced, and like, well, I don't have time to read the Bible, you know. You jump out of bed and get in the shower, and you're off to work, and like, you face the day without him, and I know by personal experience, it's a disaster. You know, when you actually take the time to pray, when you really mean it, not just say a prayer when you're half asleep, and you actually take the time to really face God and pray, and, you know, life is better.